Instead of our usual intro music, today you'll hear a short extract from a screenplay about Jack's life, and we will also be ending the show with another short extract. Warning, this episode does contain reference to issues some listeners may find difficult. Please do take care of yourself while listening to this episode.
Speaking of homes, welcome to mine. A single cell with a concrete floor. Concrete walls, a sink and a bucket. Fits too uncomfortably. And frankly, a shite view from the barred windows. My current place of residence, Her Majesty's Prison, Norwich.
Hello, and welcome back to Unexpected Turns. I'm Anne Dibben.
Hi, and I'm Bev Evans. And I can't wait for you to hear all the wonderful stories our guests are going to share with you all.
A couple of weeks ago, we had a very emotional episode with Jack Gregory, and lots of you wanted to know more. At the age of 8, he'd had his world turned upside down.
And after which, despite a really strong work ethic and a desire to make money, Jack's life spiralled into a world of crime and violence.
Yet in episode 1, season 2, A Personal Apocalypse, we heard how he had turned his life around, and in particular, how he was using poetry and his writing to help not only himself, but others. As Jack says, writing is what is helping him deal with his emotions. Is he in a good place now? You asked. Listen on and hear more. Lots of you wanted to hear more of his poetry. Jack described himself as an addict and a junkie and wrote the following poem.
The Junkie by Jack Gregory. Desolation, deprivation, fused together in a junkie's haven. Isolation has demolished the junkie's heart and sent his mind worlds apart. Idealistically, rehab is what he needs, but his habit is hungry, so his habit he feeds. His soul cries out from deep inside, crying for freedom from the dungeon of lies. His heart is burning, turning, churning in a cyclone of despair, so he punches the walls and pulls out his hair. He changes his habit from drugs to booze. After all, he's got nothing to lose. Then after a while, drink becomes his master. Now he's back on the road to disaster. Then one day, in a fit of desperation, he ran into a railway station, threw himself onto the track. Now for Junkie, there's no turning back. The train comes towards him at tremendous speed. Now there's no more habit for Junkie to feed.
Jack wrote this after watching his friend throw himself in front of a train. A very sobering poem. It's included in his book, A Personal Apocalypse, along with a very emotional letter Jack wrote to his adoptive parents.
Very emotional for the reader.
I pretty much felt like I need...
Do you know, and that comes across so much.
I needed to do it. I needed to do it for me. I needed to forgive myself. For the way that I treated my parents. Didn't speak to them for years. They didn't speak to me for years. You know, and it's only after my biological mum's funeral that I reached out. You know, it was that stubbornness on all our parts, really. But, you know, I have now have some sort of relationship with my parents. But I needed to do that. I needed to make that apology, and I needed to do it in that way because I knew that I couldn't say it to her.
It's so powerful.
It is.
You've told us a bit now about your whole story and that journey of healing. It's a long, long process. And I think people quite often think things are going to happen quickly, don't they? But you've not given up. You've thought you've got through it, but it's taken you all this time. And it's so powerful, that fight that you've had. And to get there, it's
incredible resilience, you know, shown.
I am full of admiration, and I can completely understand why the people that you talk to, you call yourself an accidental journalist,
chronicling other people's stories, I can completely understand why people would talk and tell you their story, because it is something you can relate to, and you've lived through it all.
I have.
I feel like you've lived so many lives already. It's incredible.
Yeah, and I'm now living another one that I never thought I would live, you know. The reason I'm an accidental journalist is because I never meant to get into this. You know, I wanted to write a book and that would be it. But, you know, I'd given up on the film industry, you know, on trying to do this. And then as soon as I give up and I get some degree of recovery under my belt, I get asked to work on two Martin Scorsese produced films.
Amazing.
Not only as an actor, but as a consultant, the Souvenir Part 1 and 2. And, you know, I've been very blessed to play serial killers and things like that for the Discovery Channel. And the bizarrest thing for me was I was up at the hospital mid-last year where I was asked to go and speak to a bunch of training GPs about addiction and how GPs can help in a non-medicational way. And it's like, what?
What's needed?
Me?
Yeah, and, you know, I've done that. And it's just, it's taken me so far. You know, and the reason I do this is because I really suffer from that self-doubt at times. But, you know, when COVID hit the first time, a friend of mine who's a hostage negotiator, when you need to start doing something, can I suggest a podcast? What I put about, and he said, well, you and, you know, your life that people don't see, you know. And I started it in here. It was called Shed X. I fell in love with podcasting. I fell in love with speaking. I never thought I would ever become a speaker. I've never, even now I struggle to believe that I'm motivational for anybody. What I do is I tell my story in order for people not to follow the same road that I did and make the same mistakes that I did.
Or if they have, to show them that there's a way out.
There's hope.
Exactly. I mean, this is the whole point of our podcast, that it doesn't matter what's happened in the past, it can be great. And you've shown such amazing resilience. Would you say you're happy where you are now?
Am I happy? I think the word happiness is a bit of a baited word when it comes to me. It's like when you're on these websites and, you know, it comes up with the, are you happy? And it's yes or no. That really gives me a deep philosophical thinking, but yes and no. It's life isn't easy. There are things that I still have to deal with. There are things that we have to deal with as a family. There are things that I have to deal with medically, you know, which are some of it is part and parcel to the way that I lived. And, you know, I'm dealing with MS, and you know, when I died, I ended up with brain damage through hypoxia and stuff like that. So I'm really sort of, you know, I love my life.
Yeah.
I love my wife and I love my family.
Yeah, that's lovely.
I love my church, I love my community, and I love my town very, very much. Am I always happy? No, because I battle mental illness. But I know that the life that I live is a million times better than anything that I could have ever wanted.
Yeah.
Or seen. It's a yes and no.
You've got a real zest for life there, though, which is the...
I do, because I have a lot to lose as well. When I had nothing to lose, it was easier, but I have a lot to lose. Taken me a long time to build myself up to this, to get the books behind me, to get the films behind me. You know, Do I work as much as I could? No. You know, there are books that I've been working on for a long time. You know, my last book was in 2020. And then COVID hit and I really struggled with my mental health then. You know, my next book hopefully will be out in the next month or two, which is about escaping domestic violence and people's stories of doing that. You know, and there's a few things that are on the horizon. And I'm happy with that, and I'm happy with whatever can go.
Wow.
You know, what can come. I no longer have to live within the day. I can look forward to something. And if it doesn't pan out,
that's okay.
That's fine too.
Yeah.
Because I know there's always something else around the corner. I can deal with life better, which makes me happier, and it makes my family happier and the people around me happier. As for will I ever be happy, I don't know, but there's a good chance that I can be happy at some point, hopefully.
I don't know what more to say. That's such a wonderful way to end it at some point, but knowing that you've got those things to look forward to. So once again, thank you, Jack. I realise we've talked about double the amount of time I said.
Thank you, Jack.
Very well.
I look forward to your new book coming out.
Yeah, certainly.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
Thanks.
I feel drained, honestly. I think he's, golly, knocked me down. Stand up again, knock me down, stand up again. It's,
I know.
Yeah, he's done it, you know, for his short life, really.
It was like reading his stuff. It's very emotional, Beth.
Yeah. And you find him, you know, he's so powerful, isn't it? He's, you know, and also the subject matter that he writes about and the things he's involving himself with now, like trafficking and now like domestic violence. I mean, they're huge emotional subjects, aren't they, you know? I mean, where do you begin and end? You could keep talking, couldn't you, forever and a day, really.
If you want to know more about Jack, do read his book, A Personal Apocalypse. Like us, you won't be able to read it in one go. It is emotional. You'll probably have to read it bit by bit.
That was really emotional. So a big thank you to Jack for sharing his story with us and to all our listeners. And we hope you can join us next time.
That is around 8,592 people per square mile. The vast amount of them unaware what lies beneath their feet. They get up, go to work, toddle through the day, then go home to their perfect little lives and their perfect little families, making their perfect little homes. Speaking of homes, welcome to mine. A single cell with a concrete floor. Concrete walls, a sink and a bucket. Fits too uncomfortably. And frankly, a shite view from the barred windows. My current place of residence, Her Majesty's Prison, Norwich. Home to 13 wings. Housing an average of 550 prisoners at any one time. And time passes by so slowly in this place. Yet every minute counts. There are 60 seconds in one whole minute, 60 minutes in an hour, 1,440 minutes in a day, 525,600 minutes in a year. It's a strange thing to comprehend. We let time pass without a thought or a care in the world. Some believe a minute is a short amount of time. It's only been a minute. Yeah, okay, I'll do it in a minute. I've lost count of how many times I have said that in my lifetime. Procrastination is a virtue that people like me can barely afford. It amazes me how much can happen in a minute. In one single minute, for instance, lightning will strike the earth 360 times. More than 150 acres of rainforest are lost. 267 people are born in the world, and 117 will die. When you think about it like that, a minute means everything. I guess what I'm trying to say is, every single minute is a gift, a precious gift at that. To put it bluntly, a minute can seem like a lifetime to some, especially in the godforsaken place. Looking at the same four walls nearly 23 hours a day. Though people come and go, prison traffic can get pretty heavy at times, and most share the same bewildered look on their faces. I've been in this system a few minutes myself. 4,204,800 minutes as of 3 o'clock this afternoon. Don't get me wrong, I deserve to be here. I am by far the innocent. Unlike Arthur, people claim to be in here. I know I was wrong. All the time, I wanted to protect my family, but I ended up hurting them. Myself and those around me. My so-called solutions of deliberate excess and self-imposed isolation only added to the problems and caused pain all around. Prison is hard, and it's that way for a reason. That reason is to make you think about what you've done. And believe me, I've done nothing but think since the very first minute of arriving here. Your choice is taken away the very second the cell door slams shut and you're left to think and learn at Her Majesty's pleasure. You don't know what it's like in here, on the outside looking in. You think only you could handle it, but believe me, you couldn't. I've seen monsters of men reduced to tears the minute the door slams shut. People tell you before they go down that the first night is the hardest. That's bollocks. Every day away gets harder. Every time the door slams shut, a little more of your soul dies till the days melt into one. Minutes feel like hours, and your spirit gradually fades to black. I was put into the system at 25 years old, the ghost of a human being, a child amongst men. I was a little fish in a pond full of sharks. I could handle myself to an extent, but if there's one thing that I've learned, it's you can't win them all, and you can't. There is always someone bigger, harder, and stronger than you, and at some times in your prison life, you have to come to terms with that. Beatings happen every day. If it's not you, and you see one, then take my advice, forget about it, and carry the fuck on walking. I forget you ever saw it. If it's you, then I have this advice for you. Take it and carry on with your time, with your head down. Fight back if you have to. If you can maintain some dignity, at the end of the day, it's your judgment call. Just know your own limits. I fought so many battles in here, had so many fights. If luck prevailed, I'd walk away intact and on top. But a lot of the time, I'd take a good kicking. I would always endeavour to walk away with my head held high. One of the philosophies I've learned to live by in this place is, whether the victor or the defeated, you never actually win a fight. After all, victory is the same as defeat. It's given in to those same competitive urges. Prison isn't just full of psychotic head cases and violent re-offenders. There are people here who have just made the wrong choices in life. One wrong decision, and it's welcome to the slammer. I've met a great many different people during my time in these institutions. A lot of them deserve to be here, however. There are a handful of genuine, misguided, unfortunate souls who put themselves in the wrong situation at the wrong time. Little Jimmy was one of these people. I'd been here for just over 2 years. And little Jimmy was a first-timer. His family situation was not unlike mine. His absent father, who went out to buy a packet of smokes and never to return, leaving Jimmy to fend for his mother, four sisters. Jimmy was illiterate, so he took to crime like a duck to water. One night after a long evening of drinking, one of his acquaintances suggested they rob a post office. The quickest $3,000 he would ever make. He would get his family out of the hole they were right in. In and out, the bloke told him, 10 minutes work. They got out and away very quickly. Problem was, the guy was a police informant. The police caught Jimmy moving his share of the cash and the sawn-off shotgun. Bang to rights. It's good night Vienna for him and 8 years to mull it over. I found him hanging from the top bunk in his cell one morning just before slop out. 19 years old, and he ended his life because prison broke him. Anyway, I divert from the topic.
Take care. Till next time. Bye.